I want to talk about the Beatitudes, this series of blessings, which many people regard and treat as a summary of what Jesus is about. But my head is already jumping ahead because I'm about to depart for a course called the Palestine of Jesus in Israel, and I'll be there for a month. So what I'm actually working on is the gospel text for Sunday, March 5th, because I have to write my vestry report and be done in time. And that gospel passage has another summary statement that people regard as encapsulating Christian faith. I'll come back to the Beatitudes, but I want to talk about this idea of summary statements. On March 5th, Vestry Sunday, the summary statement people will recognize is actually John chapter 3, verse 16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but may have eternal life. It's treated by many as a summary statement. It might not be the one that you would use, because we all have different ones that we gravitate towards. And I think that other than seeing it in sports stadiums, when people appreciate it, it's got the word love in it. It's got the word believe. And then it has those uncomfortable options of perish or everlasting life. When you treat it as a summary statement, you totally miss out on John 3:17, which takes the punch out of the perish part, out of the eternal perishing part, and focuses on the life part. So it's difficult when we break things down into one verse summary statements. And personally, if I wanted a summary statement on March 5th, I wouldn't choose John 3:16, I'd choose John 3:8. And it goes like this. The wind blows where it chooses, and you hear the sound of it, but you do not know where it comes from or where it goes. So it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit. And I like that verse, not just for the wind that's blowing today, but for the winds that have blown over the past year. We're in the anniversary weekend of the insurrection. And this past year has been one of great changes and us trying to keep up with them. So we had worship on Zoom. We had extra time to be on Zoom because the safety perimeter included St. John's, and that meant we had to be longer where we couldn't come back into the building. We've experienced services on video, various mask mandates, and all kinds of events to invite people back into the habit of community life. It's almost like we've been trying to catch up with the wind of the Spirit and not, you know, to use the image, capsize because the wind is too strong. I like that verse as a summary statement, but it also is lacking because it doesn't mention our loved ones who have died over this past year. It doesn't mention the beauty of creation, and it doesn't mention the friendships that have grown up between us. It's really difficult to find a summary statement that works for everybody. And if I were to ask people, they would have their favorites. For example, some people might say the Ten Commandments is their favorite summary statement because it focuses on what to do and what not to do, and that's tangible. On the other hand, it's also in our liturgy that we would use what's actually called the summary of the law, which is Jesus' reframing from the Ten Commandments into two very simple statements, one of love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, and the other one, love your neighbor as yourself. Little interesting background that Jesus was not the original rabbi to put those two statements together. They come in different parts of the Hebrew Scriptures. But he did it in a way that was convincing and lasting for us. But it didn't actually enter Anglican liturgy until 1718 in a liturgy that was for what was called the non-jurors. And then it entered the liturgy of the Episcopal Church of Scotland in 1764. So it's not ancient to our worship that we would say the summary of the law, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. It kind of expanded from there to all the Anglican Communion has it in our prayer books, and from there to all other Christian churches, but it's not ancient. The beautiful thing about love God and love your neighbor as yourself is the love part. And what it does is it takes a step back from the doing of Ten Commandments into the motivator, which is love, and from there it leaves you free to figure out, how do you love in your actions? I guess if I wanted to argue with it, I would say, well, that's beautiful, but what if we have misguided love? Then we'll make assumptions about what we should be doing that actually don't work. As I said, it's very difficult to make one statement work for everybody. And that brings me to the Beatitudes. It has also been treated as a summary of our faith. And if you've been to funerals, or even more than a few funerals, you've probably had the reading of the Beatitudes, often given as a summary of a person's life and what they've aspired to be. And I've been thinking about how comfortable are we with these statements? Do we actually aspire to these things? You know, to be poor in spirit, to be meek, to be persecuted. It seems that the way we use the word blessed would suggest that the things that we call blessed are desirable. And I can see how we might desire to be merciful or desire to be pure in heart, but who desires to be persecuted? There's one lovely one in there, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And I think of this church as an example where there are people who do hunger and thirst for righteousness as expressed in compassion and justice for all people. Lots of examples of that here, so that's a desirable one. But it seems to hinge on what we mean by blessing. When we say, blessed are the poor in spirit, what do we mean? Or this passage called the Beatitudes is also found in Luke's Gospel, where he says, just blessed are the poor. How is being poor a blessing? What we mean by blessing actually matters here. There are some Bible translations that have it as happy. Happy are the poor. And I want to say, I think that's worth arguing against. There may be people who happen to be poor and are also happy, but it would be very convenient for comfortable people to assume that they're happy because they're poor. And so I want to argue against the word happy, and now I'm going to go into the word derivations for blessed. Our English text is translated from the Greek, and the Greek for blessed is makarioi. And it actually means happy. It means happy, it means blessed, it means envied, it means supremely blessed, it means fortunate, it means well off. And if we wanted to say, well, I'm not really pleased with that meaning, we could step back to the Aramaic, because of course we have the Greek, but not the Aramaic that Jesus spoke. And then the word would be tuvehun, which would be translated along the lines of goodness. And if we wanted to take another step back into the Hebrew, well, then we're with the Jewish liturgy, Baruch Atah Adonai, blessed are you, O Lord, which addresses God. I think we live with a confusion about what we mean by blessing. You've probably heard it done in a pious way. So I went to someone's house and I was admiring their house. You have a beautiful home. Oh yeah, I'm very blessed. And I have found myself thinking afterwards, this is not anybody you know, just don't worry about that. I found myself thinking afterwards, what does this mean? I'm very blessed. Does it mean that it's a blessing to have it? Or that this home is evidence that God is blessing me and, you know, really approves of my life, and that's why I have a nice home? Which would beg the question, when you see someone sleeping rough, well, what about God's blessing for this person? It's difficult when you use the word blessing in that way. Now, you've probably heard of counting your blessings, which is a thing we say. Maybe we say it especially to ourselves when we're in a rough spot, to kind of remind ourselves of the things that are going right. But that doesn't seem to be the same thing as the way blessing is used in the Beatitudes. So, how are we going to process this? Take, blessed are the poor in spirit. It's in the passive voice. Who is doing the blessing? And why? What is the result to be? When you see, blessed are the poor in spirit, you then have to look at the second part of the phrase, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Or when you look at blessed who mourn, well, it's passive. Who's blessing them? And it says they will be comforted. Well, who's doing that? Blessing is used in this passage in the passive voice, and I want to put it in the active voice. Who is doing the blessing? I think there are two options. The first is God. God is blessing them, that whole list. God is looking on them in love, not by making them poor, but by seeing them. And God wants us to see them and love them. So that would be God is the active voice. God is doing this blessing. The second option is us. Take, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Who's going to comfort them? We are to bless them. We bless the poor in spirit when we give them our attention by loving them. We bless the meek by loving them. We bless the persecuted by giving them our attention. We see them, we help others see them, we make their persecution known. We do it as a protest against those who are persecuting them. We say we stand with them, we demand the persecution stop. We love them, and we put our love into action by advocating for them. So I think, actually, of all the potential summary texts of our faith, this is a really good one, because it takes time to unpack it and realize that it places something on us. And when we say it as a summary, we're inviting it to be placed on us. When you hear it at a funeral, as we might hear in this church, it's harder to unpack it sometimes because we're trying to focus on celebrating the life of the person who has died. And the text feels nice, it feels good, but then it's like layers. And it tells us to be the ones who stand with and who see and who love, because that's the lived out blessing. It asks us to be a blessing. And not just one person, because it's a whole list. It's to be a way of life. It's as if God's goodness is calling us to goodness. If I were to come back to what is a summary text of faith, maybe you can think what yours would be. Maybe it changes month by month, depending on your circumstances. What summarizes what being a Christian and living a Christian life is for you? Can there be any one text that would do that? I think Christianity is sufficiently layered and complex and rich with possibilities that the summary will change from day to day. But this one, the Beatitudes, is God's goodness calling us to goodness.